Yeah, welcome to Behind the News, where you get the last word on the day's topical stories. My name is Agatha Samuel. Tonight, Ghana's beaches becoming free range for open defecation. Why would people descend so low when there are public places of convenience? A sociologist gives his perspectives. And NDC elections getting closer, but who wins a hotly contested chairmanship position in the Greater Accra region? The current holder of the position, Joseph Kobina Adekoka, will be my studio guest tonight to answer all your nagging questions regarding the NDC in the Greater Accra region. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our program tonight. You can also join the discussions via text 0266677570, 0266677570. But first, Yvonne Atilegu is here with a summary of the day's news.
The Ashanti regional editor of Daily Graphic, Daniel Kenu, has decided to discontinue an assault case involving him and Bafo Jain at a Kumasi Circuit Court. When the case was called for hearing today, Kenu, who is the complainant, tendered in a withdrawal note to the court through the prosecutor, saying he has taken the decision purely on health grounds and other related family matters. As part of government's efforts to reduce cases of cholera and also provide places of conveniences, Vice President Kwesi Emesa-Asa has inspected the construction of new affordable places of convenience known as biofuel toilet system at La in the La Dadekotupon Municipal Assembly in Accra. The system, according to the Vice President, will be replicated in other MMDAs across the country when it becomes successful. And NADMO has warned it will not to go to any Ebola scene in the unlikely event the disease breaks in Ghana if it is not equipped. The organization says as frontliners in major disasters, its workers stand the greatest risk of infection. It has therefore called on the state to provide staff of the organization with the necessary protective equipment to enable them to respond adequately. The national coordinator, Kofi Potifi, gave the warning when the interior minister, Mark Oyongo, paid a working visit to the national headquarters of the organization.
It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News is also live on Ura Radio 89.7 in Bogatanga, Radio Savannah 91.2 in Tamale, Garden City Radio 92.1 in Kumasi, and Twin City Radio 94.7 in Sekendi, Takoradi. Now to our first story. Shakespeare has noted that no art could tell the mind's construction in the face. Assuming this was factual, you would have wished the reverse were the case to know the mindset of some who find nothing wrong with defecating at no other place than our beaches. Dumping refuse and fecal matter in water bodies are just but a few of insanitary acts that pose serious danger to our environment. In the wake of rising cholera cases and filth-induced diseases, have we turned a blind eye to these continuous and unacceptable acts? Some of the country's beaches are regular scene of open defecation and other insanitary conditions. Our central regional correspondent, Kingsley Nanabwedu, is standing by to give us a live report on the issue. Kingsley, good evening. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, Agatha.
Kingsley, what more can you tell us about open defecation at our beaches in relation to the central region?
Well, my sister, you agree with me that when it comes to the central region, we have so many coastal lines and communities. What it is that, as I speak with you, I am right at the back of the Golden Jubilee Square, of super known as Victoria Square. At the back of it, there's a beach there. And I have walked along the beaches, but what I'm saying, there are fizzies, excuse me to say, and everywhere. Earlier on, I went around some of the beaches, and I saw people openly around at the back of the Kakapo Castle, people openly doing it. And along the beaches, coming to the police station at the back there, there were people also doing it. As I speak with you now, I am told that they have a time that they used to do this openly. So I am just standing by. I am not seeing anybody where I stand now, but I have been told to go for it, that I will see where they do a whole lot of things. Just about a week or two, we visited Anomabo, which is also in the central region, in the Infantiman to be precise, and what we saw was something else. People doing their own thing, even at the time that they were having communal labor, they were doing some cleanup exercise in the morning, and it's open and people were doing it. What even made us scared had to do with the fact that children were eating alongside people doing their own thing, and then the bunch of flies that were on the food that the children were eating was quite scary. And so if you are asking about the situation, that is what it is. That is a big tap. I was asking somebody what at least moved them to.
Yes, well, why do you think they do that?
Well, somebody told me that where I was even working, especially around the Takano police station somewhere going to, there's a school there, I was asking somebody, and the person told me that my brother wanted to say that they have some two toilet facilities around the area, but it is the old ones, that's the latrine. And they feel going to that side, especially where the beach is quite easier than using the latrine, which they feel is not kept clean, and so on and so forth. So being there, and naturally the air blowing you and all of that, that is what moved them, even though they are not happy with it, but that is the situation. And again, the guy who was talking to me himself confessed that he has just come from that side, and that he thought that I was also going to do my own thing there. So I should use this corner, but that's what he do. He just came from there. So I interrogated further, and the point is that they feel at ease, they feel okay doing it at that particular site than using the KVIP that have been provided for them. So that has been the motivation.
Kingsley, is it also the case that there are not enough places of convenience in the region?
Well, that can be another factor, but not where I am. Because the guy pointed to me two toilet facilities there, but he felt that it is not more than enough. It is not what the coach said, where you finish, you can just flush it. They would have always died, say something like that. But it is KVIP, that latrine sort of thing, and it's not kept clean and all of that. So they prefer going here, especially even though they know it is not the appropriate place to go, they prefer using it because the sea will just wash it off and all of that. So I was asking the implication, whether they know of it. He couldn't say any much thing about it, but he was like, it's like they are aware of it. Then I asked, so what needs to be done? Somebody also told me that when they used to have, is it the Zoil organized, the company that was patrolling the beaches, that thing minimized, it came down small. But the fact of the matter is that we know the Zoil has been suspended, they are no more in operation, we don't see them anymore. And for that matter, it has also, now they have resumed their normal activity. So it is something that you cannot, it's not solely the fact that there's no toilet facilities. That is also a contributory factor. But where am I, for instance, they can't say that is exactly the case because they pointed to me two toilet facilities around the area, but he told me he just came from there and he was even directing me where I should go to do it. And I was like, wow. So it is not really about not having toilets, but in certain instances and certain cases and certain places, that is the case. They don't have toilet facilities, but now there are other places. But they feel the motivation is that going there, you feel at ease in terms of maybe the cleanness of the place to there, you do it and they will see you wash it. So that is the motivation.
Kingsley, there are some perpetrators who also say that the gods instructed them to do that, and the practice ensures bumper harvest. Are you aware of this?
Well, it's quite strange. Some of them that I spoke to have never expressed that concern. But these are people who believe that, especially the typical people, the fishermen, for instance, they read so many meanings into some of the things that they do. And they think that it's something that they have done over the years. And some even think that they even feed the fishes in the sea. Maybe based on that, when you talk to them, I have not gotten that angle of the gods, but some of them, when you I spoke to them. They give an indication that the tape is even a source of food for the fishes in the sea. And they need some sort of education as to what they are doing and what it is in terms of diseases and all of that.
In terms of needing education, what is the assembly doing there so that they can nip the practice in the bud?
Well, I know the district assemblies are doing perhaps what they could do when you ask them. They say within, under the circumstance, under the way they operate, because there are instances where the complaint of maybe fans not coming at the appropriate time to deal with some of these things. There are instances they also talk about when they provide the latrines and all of that, the people still want to go that side. So the Zoy, for instance, it stemmed the situation, it brought the situation quite down. But now that they are no more, it's like they have resumed their own thing. So the education needs to be done. I believe in Cape Coast, for instance, the assembly, sometimes you hear them, they're talking about it, doing it. But still, I guess something, there's so much that needs to be done in terms of education and sensitizing the people as to the need not to do some of these things along the beach. So the education, I guess they are doing, but of course, I guess they need to do more.
Kingsley, we want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight. Kingsley Nanabuedo is our Central Regional Correspondent. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana, Accra. And we scheduled the Metropolitan Chief Executive for Cape Coast, Mrs. Priscilla Conte, ahead for an interview. Unfortunately, she has not been responding to our calls. But let's go to the phone lines again. And the former head of Sociology Department of the University of Ghana, Legon, Professor Kuju Sena, has joined us. Good evening, Prof. Welcome to the program.
Good evening. Good evening to your listeners.
Well, Prof, what could prompt someone to embark on open defecation, irrespective of the provision of a place of convenience?
Well, the reasons may be many. It may be due to, yes, you may have the facility, but indeed the facility may not be accessible in terms of cost. The facility may not be accessible in terms of physical distance. The facility may not be accessible in terms of the smell, you know, that's around the whole place. So people may decide to do something else instead of accessing this facility.
But Prof, our culture does not encourage filth. So how come people decide to, defecate anywhere along the beaches and open place?
Yeah, that is very true. Our cultures don't allow that. But you will indeed encounter these experiences when you go out of the villages or when you are in the cities. You know, when people have no access to these facilities, and they are hard pressed, you know, then they are forced to do something else. Let me give you a typical example. If you go to maybe Okanshi area, and all of a sudden your stomach decides to rumble, where do you go? What do you do? You know, the facilities are not there. You may go to some of the coastal areas in Accra. There may be one or two toilet facilities for a whole population. People will go there queuing. But as you and I are aware, the toilet cannot wait. So they will be compelled to do something. So indeed, the bottom line is that people do not have access to these facilities.
Well, at the Animal Boo Beach, for instance, one of the perpetrators of the open defecation was reported as saying the gods instructed them to do that, and the practice ensures bumper harvest.
I don't know which community is that, but as far as I know,
at the Anomabu Beach.
Anomabu Beach.
Yes, in the central region.
That the gods have instructed them to do that.
Yes, and the practice ensures bumper harvest.
Well, and are they enjoying the bumper harvest anyway? Are they enjoying the bumper harvest even when they do that? You know, but for me, and the little studies we have conducted, it will show clearly that people do not have access to these facilities. Even when the facilities are there, the smell, you know, puts people off. You may go to the toilet, come out for a whole hour. Anybody who passes by you knows that you have been somewhere. Currently, we have a study going on in one of the coastal areas, to be specific, Pampam area. And we come here with all kinds of interesting, you know, findings relating to open defecation. People are compelled to openly defecate when they are hard pressed. But if we are able to put structures in place, facilities in place, that conform or that exist with their norms and values, we will be making a headway. I do not discount the fact that, of course, even when the facilities are there, there are a few people who will go off tangent. But generally, when the facilities are available, and people and the facilities conform to what they expect, they will use them.
Prof, from the part of the sociologists, how can the district assemblies, the Ghana Tourism Authority and other stakeholders deal with the practice?
Come again?
I'm asking, how can the district assemblies, the Ghana Tourism Authority and other stakeholders deal with the practice? I mean, open defecation along the beaches.
Well, very simple. You need to go to those communities and find out, you know, their perception, their attitude towards open defecation. And they'll tell you. The thing is that here in Ghana, we do things before we go and consult the public. Every development must harmonize with people's perceptions, their norms and values. And here we don't do that. We simply go in there and say, oh, Ghana Tourist Board, we don't put the defecation on the toilet, so here is a toilet for you. Does that toilet conform to the people's views? You know, does it harmonize with their norms and values regarding sanitation, regarding, you know, the use of such facilities? You know, dealing with people is very, very difficult. But in the long run, if you factor their views into any development project, the project, you know, works better for all of us.
And is it not ironic that in some countries, beaches are used to generate revenue for the state, and we are rather misusing such useful resource?
Yes, we are wasting the resource because we do not know how to use our beaches. I've been to several countries, and you have visited all kinds of beaches, very beautiful beaches in Brazil, in the Holland, wherever. Beautiful beaches. People don't defecate there because people have access to these facilities. You know, if you are driving in Accra and, for instance, you have to visit the toilet, you visit any gas filling station and say you want the toilet and let them show you the toilet. Let them show you. It's horrible. Accra Central, Opera Square, I took time, I paid and went into the toilet there just to see and to take pictures. I have them. I use them for lecture. Horrible. People cannot go there. You see, so when people are pressed and they see the beach is there, open, blowing nicely, people will be tempted to go in there. Or if they don't go there, they want to hide at the corner, do something in a rubber bag and throw it anywhere. So we need to make sure that when we are stopping people, when we are trying to stop people from using those places, we must make facilities available. And then when these facilities are available and they conform to their views, to their facilities harmonize with, you know, the way they see toilets, fine, we will be starting from somewhere. But for now, we are not doing anything serious.
Well, open defecation along the beaches brings to mind the threat of cholera. From your point of view, how can the issue be addressed?
Well, at least from the study that we are conducting, people believe that the sea is a mighty cleanser. They defecate on the beach, the sea cleans it off, or the sea takes it off. People believe that you can, you know, once the sea takes it off, it breaks it down, and that is it. It's a belief. If we want to stop people from going to the beach, then we have to provide facilities that to prevent them from going to the beach. So the cholera will continue as long as we are not dealing with the fundamental issues related to the views of the people.
But Prof, apart from providing decent places of convenience, would you recommend strict enforcement of the rules and regulations of sanitation along the beaches?
Yes, you see, madam, I'm talking like a sociologist, obviously. The thing is that before you enforce laws, you have to make sure that there are facilities, there are places where people can use so that the enforcement of the law becomes meaningful. Anytime I'm in Accra and I've taken a number of pictures of this, you will see, don't urinate here. don't urinate, don't PC, spot fight, so and so. That you never see next to that information or next to that order an arrow showing you to the toilet or to the urinal. Don't urinate here, then there must be an arrow to say urinal. Have you ever seen a thing like that before? In Accra. So you see our walls, you know, painted with all kinds of bad material. So if I'm saying that if we can stop this, then we need to provide this facility. Are you right? This is a urinal. You're right. You don't urinate here. There's an arrow showing you. This is the urinal. And that's not all. We also must make sure that people can afford to use these facilities. If I have running stomach and I have to pay 20 p's for every visit to the toilet, and because of my running stomach, I have to go there 3, 4, 5 times a day, you know what that means. So we have a big problem in Ghana. We have a big problem. And it is government's social responsibility to provide it. I was just watching the TV, and I saw a biofuel toilet or something, which has just been commissioned at the Isilla or somewhere.
Yeah.
It is beautiful. But then I asked myself, how many people can have this in their homes? Think of Bukom. People must have toilets in their homes to stop all this open defecation. But in these traditional areas, where would they locate the toilet? When they locate the toilet, where would they put the septic tank? When they provide the septic tank, do these septic tanks have rocks or have passages so that when they are filled, trucks can come there and dislodge them? There are a number of questions. So I have been saying that the government's decision not to provide public toilets, at least for some areas, is wrong.
Yes. Now, Prof, why would someone describe the poor situation regarding open defecation as a sociology of shit? Or what is sociology of shit, if you can explain to us?
Well, yes, I over the last 3-4 years, I've been interested in, defecation as a sociological subject. In a lot of cases, very many people who don't want to talk about toilet, to be more crude, they will not want to talk about shit. But I argue that going to toilet, defecation, is a sociological issue. Indeed, in the villages, when people are going to toilet and they meet their neighbors, they don't greet them. It's a sociological issue. There are instances where people may not want to use the same toilet with other people, with their relatives or with other people. It's a sociological issue. So I have coined this term, in the sociology of shit, just to describe the kind of activities, the kind of things we need to do, the kind of studies we need to do, to understand our defecation practices and feed these, the results, into policies. So that's what sociology of shit is all about.
Well, and briefly, Prof, in our discussions or in discussing this issue, can one say poor planning of the communities is impacting negatively on our environment?
Oh, definitely, definitely. We have laws, rules and regulations regarding town planning. But how many officials actually go in there to see to it that, these things are done? If you want to build a house, you are expected to submit a plan to the district authorities or whoever. They will look at the plan, check the number of toilets and blah, 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 and then approve the plan for you. But then, in executing your plan, nobody comes there to see whether the 4 toilets or the 3 toilets you have identified in your building, are there. Nobody. Nobody do it. So we have a big planning problem. We have urban planning department which does not do any planning or which does not supervise any. Indeed, everything is broken down. So we have a big problem. Planning and in our urban areas, indeed, I'll better say that there are no plans at all.
Prof, I want to thank you very much for your time with us tonight. Professor Kuju Sena is a former head of sociology, Department of the University of Ghana, Legon. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Ladies is also live on Radio BR 93.5 in Sinai, Radio Upper West 90.1 in Wav, Water Star Radio 91.1 and 91.3 in Ho, Obonu FM 96.5 in Tema, Garden City Radio 92.1 in Kumasi, and Yura Radio 89.7 in Bogatanga. To some of your text messages, Bahama Inwa says that the GFA reinstate KC Appiah and give him freedom to operate. What does Milo take us Ghanaians for? We don't need him to succeed. And J.K. Owo in Mapon says, if reporters and footballers are friends, then Mr. Kenny's withdrawal is in order. And Cassie George in Nigeria says, oh Ghana, why is it that we can't abstain from debt and calling ourselves gateway to Africa? And Monica Kons in Navrongo says, help the Minister of Roads and Highways so fix the Navrongo Tumu Wa Road, which is in a deplorable condition. They keep saying they would tie it, but up till now, it is the same old story. Many thanks for your text messages. It promises to be a hot contest as the contestants to the Greater Accra Regional Chairmanship position ups the ante. Apart from the incumbent chairman, Joseph Kobna Adekoka, who is gunning for a second term, some hot shots in the NDC in Greater Accra have also thrown their hat into the ring. Among them, the former Lekmachi executive Daniel Mensah-Marty, former Ododudu MP Nitaki Kome, Stephen Akwete, and Manly Spain. The Greater Accra Regional Chairmanship position is one of the hotly contested positions in the party, and judging by the lineup eyeing Mr. Dekoka's seat, it looks like his position as the boss of the NDC in Greater Accra is under threat. But is that actually the case? And we have Joseph Kobna Adekoka in the studio with us tonight. Good evening.
Good evening.
And you are welcome.
Thank you.
So let me first ask you, is your position under threat in any way, judging by the caliber of those contesting you?
I don't think it's under threat. It's a democracy, and everybody has got the opportunity or the chance to want to be there, to lead the party. So for me, it's not a threat. The important thing is whether they have what it takes to lead the party. And I believe that the good people of NDC appreciate what we've done. The job of the first and foremost job of a party chairman is to win an election. And we in Greater Accra won the last election. If you go back to 2008, the difference between the NDC and NPP in Greater Accra was about 50,000 votes. That was the difference. In the first round, we lost. In the second round, we were able to come up a bit to win the win the presidency. This time round, we beat the NPP by a whopping amount of 328,000 votes. And that propelled the NDC to win first round and the presidency as well. We increased our seat also to 22 seats. So for me, that is the yardstick that you have to use to judge me. And also, if you look at the MPP in Greater Accra, the chairman whom I overwhelmingly defeated and his team were all returned back to power in Greater Accra. So if my opponent whom I defeated has been retained and retained, then what about a winning team? I think you don't change a winning team. So I'm not perturbed at all.
So none of these people pose any threat to you because you fought a hotly contested race to defeat Daniel Anan. But among the names, have you thought about the one who posed the greatest threat to your bid to retain the seat?
Not at all. Not at all.
Not even one.
No. Not at all. I am not perturbed. I believe that the good people of NDC knows somebody who works very hard. I mean, they reward people who work very hard. And I can attest the fact that even look at the time of the night that you've called me to come and talk about NDC, and I'm here to ensure that the party is kept alive in the region. So I believe that come the day of the election, the good people of NDC would definitely return me to continue the good works I'm doing for them. So I am not in the least perturbed at all.
But let me ask you, why are you going for a second term? You run for a first term. Why are you going for a second term? And why do you think the delegates in Accra should retain you?
Well, you know, in our political jargons, normally one comes to serve for two terms and then you exit. I believe that 2016 election is going to be a very, very important election. And you need people who have been there before, who have been tried and tested, to lead the NDC to retain President Mahama. So if you change those who are already there, who have got the experience, who have done it before, that is when the wisdom of the MPP decide to leave those who have already done it before, because they will learn from their mistakes. So we who have done it before, why should we change that? Because as I said earlier on, the important thing for any party leader is to win an election. If you don't win the election, then all the work that you've done over the years becomes something in the you just have wasted a lot of time. But we have won, and we've got we know how we won the last, how hard we worked, the kind of people we worked with who are still alive. So I believe on that basis alone, you don't need to change your winning team. Because don't forget, we've got only 1.5 years to go to the election. And if you are not careful and you just let it go, you're going to have a lot of problems on your hands.
So you are saying you have the experience and you don't change a winning team.
You don't change a winning team.
So the delegates should retain you.
They should retain us. Not me alone, but me and my lieutenants.
You and your lieutenants. But there are all sorts of allegations against you by your opponents. One being that you have superintendence over spurious constituency elections in a way that will elect executives who invariably retain you as their chairman.
That's not true. We've been going through, I'm just coming from one at Amasaman, and the person who won the seat, the president in Amasaman, is called one Mr. Ernest Thompson. He just contested one Mr. Akwa, who happens to be acting a vice chairman of the constituency. This is the first time I've even met Mr. Ernest Thompson, and he had won a seat. You go to other constituents in Domiko Abin, where Mr. Akwa has won this. And these are newcomers. So how do I determine who gets the nod? No. What we did was that a committee was put in place, a vetting committee was put in place. Per our constitution, you need to have 2 members from the constituency and 1 member from the region to constitute a vetting committee. And they do the vetting. If we've got 34 constituencies, and that is exactly what happened. And the report of the vetting committee is what I transmitted to the various participants. And that is it. After that, I don't have any control over who gets elected or not. You see, but out of about 1,000 or more people who were vetted, right, only about 10 or 15 were disqualified on various, they did not satisfy the various guidelines within in the party. So if you look at the quantum of people who were passed and the number of people who were disqualified, it is just a minute, right? And
so the disqualification doesn't have anything to do with the fact that you intentionally disqualify some candidates you think will win the constituency elections but vote against you in the regional elections?
No, I just told you that even the vetting, I did not participate in the vetting for me to have the intention of disqualifying somebody. But the vettees are people that came from the constituencies to do the vetting. Right, so, and I was not involved in the vetting. For me to know that you are going to win, so you have to be disqualified. No. That's not how the system works. But the perception. See, once you have been disqualified, and because I was the one who signed the letters announcing the disqualification, then naturally, once you are the leader of the pack, everything is thrown at you. But the crux of the matter is that the vetting was done by a committee that was put up, two from the constituencies and one from the region.
So then why would others think you are influencing the race?
Well, you see, when people have tested the ground and they find it difficult, then they have to put spurious allegations on you. And that's the way politics goes. That is exactly what politics... Then they have to come up with stories. Fortunately for me, those who went to be vetted know that I did not vet them, and so far I am very comfortable with whatever is happening because there's no iota of truth in it.
But can we have clean politics without these spurious allegations?
That is the problem. That is the crux of the matter. You see, that's the crux of the matter. Our politics over the years is becoming, let me destroy this gentleman before I can move on. And that is what is putting away people who can contribute to the development of this country. Because if you don't have that skin to be able to absorb the kind of insults that are heaped or the kind of allegation and stories that you wake up in the morning.
And you have that kind of skin.
Oh, I've got that skin because I've been through the mill for a very long time. You remember, once you are in football, once you've been a football administrator, then I'm sure you must have a thick skin. I remember one of my former chairman, Anna Brubakla, so that's why he's got a thick skin. You must have a thick skin. That's why this evening I'm here to tell you that what you are hearing is not what it is. But somebody wants to score political points and is going to say things. But then when you know that the truth is on your side, you fear no fool.
The allegation is that you send the letters to the disqualified candidates a day to the election so that they cannot...
No. The letters were sent to the constituency's executives. They have to announce it. They have to call the meeting, a general meeting, and announce it. No. The moment the vetting was completed, right, the letters went out exactly a day after. We didn't know that the people in the constituencies were holding the letters announcing their disqualification. No, you see, there are structures in the party. Let us go to the constituency and have the constituency executives also to pass them on. We did not pass the letters straight to those who have been disqualified. It was sent to the system. So I can't be accused of holding the information one day to election time. No.
So you are saying your hands are clean in all these?
I can put my hand on my chest and tell you, I don't need to create an unleveling playing field because that will not help you. You only win an election if the people believe, no matter what you do to them, if they don't have that belief in you, you can go about and say all manner of things. But if the people feel that this is the person who we feel we didn't fit. So I believe when I go to this kind of program, I need to tell about my story. I don't need to talk about anybody. You also go and tell your story. And the people with the better judgment are there to listen to and make a better judgment. And that is what, and I feel, for me, Joseph Kobina Adekoka, I believe it is not, I am not a today's person. I've gone to the mill for a very long time, and I'm a winner.
It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra, and Behind the News is also live on Ura Radio 89.7, Bogataga Radio Savannah 91.2, in Tamale Garden City Radio 92.1, in Kumasi Twin City Radio 94.7, in Sekendi Takade, and my studio guest tonight is the Great Accra Regional Chairman of the NDC, Joseph Kobna Ade Koka, and we are talking about the chairmanship position race in the party. And earlier you mentioned Ernest Thompson, the Amasaman elections. Is he the one, Ernest Thompson of Sunni Dawi?
No, that's not him. I think he's a lawyer. Today was even when he came to vetting, I didn't even meet him. Today was the first time that I saw him when he was elected. When I went there, I saw the PR, said, who was contesting here? I didn't know who were contesting there. So I asked and he said, Mr. Ernest Thompson and why Mr. Akwa? They are competing with the chairmanship. And that's it. When I went to Domi Kwabenya, the same thing. And when I went to Trobo Amasa, the same thing. I read, and most of the people I saw there are people that, even though I'm the chairman, you cannot know everybody. And this is what I met for the first time. And they know me because I'm the chairman. But for me, if they mention their name, I have to pretend that I know, not to embarrass them. So that's the situation. You know, you cannot influence it. It's not possible for you to influence anything. And I said, these are spurious allegations that people want to put in the system. But the delegates are discerning, and they know that it is not. What rather happens is that people are keeping bags of money to go and use it to influence the delegates, which I think is wrong. Our body politic must be devoid of this kind of behavior, where people are warming up with money bags to go and buy the conscience of the delegates, and that is what all of us as a party, as a people, should be able to kick against.
Well, Mr. Adekoka, one of your opponents in the race, Daniel Mensah-Mate, is reported to have accused you of incompetence and inefficiency, and the cause of all the court injunctions in the Greater Accra Regional Party. Are you aware of this?
You see, I'm not the type of person who will use such a word on an opponent, because when you say incompetence, then one will ask, give me your achievement in life. Tell me what you have done in life. Where have you worked in life? What kind of work have you done? And I will judge you by you. When you tell me that, I'll tell you your level of competence or incompetence. Notwithstanding that, I wouldn't want to go that way. Because these people that I have superintended over in the last 4 years, I've interviewed you to be given a municipal chief executive position. So does that mean all those times I was incompetent? Well, I don't want to go there.
You wanted your seat.
So if you are going that line, I believe that I am more than competent. In election, look at the MPP. And they're having problems with their election. When it comes to this time of the year, when there is election, don't you think it is rather good that people are resorting to the court rather than using cutlasses and hoes and cudgels to break people's head? Gone are the days. So if people are using the system to have a redress, does that mean it's incompetence? You prefer a situation where people are using cudgels and cutlasses to cut the head of people. That one you call competence. So I believe those are semantics. Those are words of people who want a position, and for want of words, they choose to use that. But for me, if I structure myself from the day I was born up to now, I can give you a litany of things that I've done that, when it comes to competence, my competence level is very high, and I believe so. I've never been an incompetent person.
Well, we will come to that. The person you just responded to, Mr. Amate, has been listening to our conversation, and he wants to make intervention.
When I come to the studio, I don't like those kind of interventions.
We will not make an argument.
I have come here for you to interview me. I have, if you want, you can invite him to come and sit here, but I don't like banter.
We will take a quick response.
No,
from
I don't,
him,
I don't like.
Then, no, he will not banter.
I don't like a banter.
He will not banter.
No,
with you.
Madam Host, you are interviewing me, and that is it. I am not here to banter with anybody.
All right.
Anytime he wants to intervene, this evening, he went on Peace FM and made a lot of spurious allegations. I never called into Peace FM. You've come to interview me. You want us to come and interview. Then we'll continue. I don't want anybody to come in into my conversation.
We will not banter with him. So what is the cause of the court injunction in Ningo and Dakar?
Well, in Ningo, there's a gentleman who contested a parliamentary election, the last election, and lost. And when he lost, he defected to the NDP. And stood for an election on the NDP ticket. And by our rules and regulations, once you do that, you are automatically dismissed from the party. If you want to come back to join the party, you need to make an application to your branch. Then your branch will bring it to the constituency, and then the constituency will form the region. He hasn't done that, and he has come back wanting to be the chairman of Ningo Pampram. Per our rules, that automatically disqualifies him. And this is one of the cases that, per the rules, he hasn't done the right thing. When you disqualified him, he says he's taking you to court. You understand? So does this make you incompetent? This is somebody who, on the statement of polls, you see him in NDP colors, fired with the electoral commissioner that he wants to contest on NDP ticket. But our rule, the moment you do that, you are dismissed from the party. And he comes back and he wants to contest as a chairman. And that is these are some of the reasons that court cases arises.
And what about the one at Medina, for instance?
The one at Medina, that has got to do with a branch. We've got about 151 branches in Medina. And there's this one called Oyerefa branch, where a branch election was held. And I'll tell you the funny side of this one. This is one where there was a previous chairman, who somebody wanted to take his position. So they came to an agreement that he is going to relinquish his position as chairman and become a treasurer. And then he asked them, if I do that, do I get to become a delegate? And he was told so. So when the election took place, he went for the position of treasurer and another person got the position of chairmanship. Now, when he realized that he cannot be a delegate, he decided that he wants to be the chairman. So, when they brought the returns, we in the region take the returns that they bring us from the constituency. Then when we realized that, they decided to change him to become a chairman. And so the chairman who had won the seat said, no, I'm not going to allow that. And instead of them coming for internal settlement, that chairman whose name was changed for the one who was the original chairman, decided to go to court. And this is not the fault of the region. So when you realize that, but you have made a petition to us before even going to court. Now that matter has been settled. We met them. We said, no, we are going back to have that place sorted out. Either you agree for a re-round of an election, or the status quo remains the same. Because you have decided that you don't want to be a chairman anymore, you want them to be a treasurer. So these are the kind of nuances that comes in play. So that has got to do with three branches and those matters have been sorted out. I believe it's better that way than them throwing cutlasses and cudgels around themselves.
You rather prefer them going to court
for us to resolve the issue. Or what they should have done initially, or should have used internal structures, which they failed to do. And most of them do not avail themselves with the internal structure because they believe that it might delay. So they rather put the election on hold for the internal structures to be dealt with. And most of these are so spurious that we have dealt with them, and the elections are taking place.
So how about strengthening internal party structures? So that when they have grievances, they can come there rather than resorting
to the court. It's very true. The party politics has traversed over the past 20 years. You know, when it started, people were just picked from somewhere or just invited to come and join party. As we go on, we realize that new rules and regulations must be brought into place to strengthen the structures. You understand? And that is, people have to then understand that what we are doing 5, 10, 15 years ago is not relevant today, and that we must change the system. So, as we go on and we travel along, we try to ensure that these things are put into place for party. All the parties are suffering the same kind of malaise because people think that when you become a branch executive or consul, you must be paid. Because previously, these were voluntary jobs. Now, people are asking for even when they come to functions, or they are asking for you to make sure that their transport and all those things are paid. Previously, these were voluntary things that people were doing. But times are changing. And we have to amend the times to suit the current dispensation.
And how do you ensure that you run a campaign devoid of insults and casting slay on each other?
Yes, that's what I said earlier on. But when you go tell the people what you can do, I'm going to have a banter. You know, it's not necessary. Somebody is having his program. If you go and do yours, but I refuse to do those kind of things. You know, why? I don't have to banter with anybody. We are here to talk about.
Sometimes it's an opportunity for you to clear the air.
Yeah, ma'am, we are talking behind the headlines. Is that not what we are doing? So we are clearing the we are clearing what is behind the headlines. There's no need to banter. It's not necessary. It makes your program, it degenerates, and your program goes down. So that's how I believe that. Talk about it. I will talk about it. This is me, Adekoka. And I, like I said to you, when it comes to pedigree, I think I've gotten it. Because when you come to football, for 5 solid years, I was the chairman of Accra Great Olympics. And I took them to a height. Right? When you go to my personal business, for the past 25 to 30 years, I've been doing my own business. I've never done a government job. I've never waited for the government to give me a job before I become what I become. You know, I've been on my feet, and that is what is important. So that is what I say, there's a pedigree.
Well, let's go a bit backwards to the court injunctions, and those who have gone to court, are they likely to face the wrath of the party?
Yeah, the general secretary only 2 days ago issued a statement that it is better for you to use the internal structures because you'll be listened to. And invariably, with out of 34 constituencies, only 5 are the people who have resorted to court action. Right? And we would have been very happy if they had used the internal party structures. And like I said to you, with the ones regarding the branches, for instance, we have sat down and the matters have been resolved, and most of them have withdrawn their court cases, and we are moving on. So if they had availed themselves earlier on with the internal structure, I'm very positive that they will have the hearings that we gave them or the actions that were taken will have taken. So I will employ upon most anybody who has any grievance in the party, first and foremost, to avail themselves with the party internal structure, which is strong enough to see to the resolution of the problems that arises.
But you agree with me that these are aggrieved people. Don't you think you should ensure that they are happy at least to stay in the party?
That's why I've told you that. With the ones, most of the cases that has come up for the past 3 days and four days, we've been able to resolve the issues and the party is moving on. I can even show you on my mobile phone a guy who had even come to thank us for being able to give him audience, because we said to him, look, you have a future in the party. If you take your party to the law courts, you know, it puts your case might be right, but it puts a dent on your CV. In future, somebody will refer you that you are somebody who, on the whims and caprices of something, you just rush to the court. So I will appeal to all our members that there are enough internal structures to listen to grievances when you have it, and it will inure to their benefit if they do that.
But let me briefly also seek your knowledge on the withdrawal of the case involving Bafo Dime by the graphic reporter Daniel King. What's your view on this issue?
Well, you see, that's an individual decision. Kenu is a very good friend of mine. I've known him for a very long time. He's a very seasoned journalist, right? And sometimes that is why we have something called arbitration. Sometimes it's very important that if there's room for arbitration to take place. So I believe that if to go dragging the thing to the in the court will take a long time. And though the wheels of justice grind slowly, you might get there. But then if there's room for the people to agree on a certain road of compensation, I'm sure the compensation will come in. Then I think, but there's a need for everybody to be tolerant. That's important, that people should be tolerant. And the question that was asked Jan, he will have either said no comment or say that, well, this the search or are in the hands of the authorities, and you end it there. And I don't think there was a need for his brothers to go and attack a journalist who was doing his rightful job.
Now, this race, Mr. Adekoka, is surely going to be hotly contested, judging by all the banter that is going on in the media. Why do you think Greater Accra is always hotly contested, probably more than the other 10 regions? Is it because it is the capital? Because there was a similar thing the last time you defeated Mr. Anand.
Well, you know that the Greater Accra is the capital of the country. And all eyes are here. And it's the McCoy of all the regions. And I believe that others have labored. And we've come to add to the labors of others. Naturally, somebody to want to come and add to the labors of what others have done. That's democracy. But I believe there's a saying in our local dialect, Aminipang Kasa.
So do you think you will win in the end?
My dear, I said Aminipang Kasa.
I mean, are you not scared of all the work they are doing to unseat you?
No. I've told you I've got a tough skin. And I've told you that I have traversed this path before, right? And I believe that it is the Almighty who picks kings and queens. And if it's your time, regardless of any machinations, you'll be there. And I said, with the Lord, with God in my vessel, I will ride the storm.
We want to thank you very much for your time with us. tonight, Mr. Ade Kukai, Joseph Kovna Ade Kukai is a great Accra regional chairman of the NDC, is behind the news. This is where we wrap up for tonight's edition of the program. Gifty Broom controlled the sounds, and my producers were Christopher Sidi Edmond, Tete Baitagama, John Pobi Celestina, V. Ejeni Boatne Jane, and Belland Elom. Yvonne Atilego read the summary. My name is Agatha Samoa, and you have a lovely weekend.